You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Can you tell us about the internship you did with Disability Connect and the insights you gained into housing for disabled people?
Yeah, sure. So I was privileged enough to intern with Disability Connect through the University of Auckland's Politics 774 internship course. And Disability Connect is a local advisory service, actually just located here in Auckland, down in Penrose. And they're a small organization that provides sort of support to families with disabled loved ones, and they offer guidance and to help navigate, you know, the New Zealand disability sector throughout different, you know, resources, support groups, seminars, and community discussions. And I was privileged enough to produce a report as part of my internship for the organization that looked at housing in New Zealand and its impacts on the community resilience of disabled people and their families. And this report essentially highlights the fact that there is a significant disparity in the housing experiences of disabled people and non-disabled people, which is ultimately negatively affecting their physical, mental, and social well-being. And the fact of the matter is, you know, New Zealand's current housing stock does not meet the needs of our current disabled population, with many disabled people and their families living in homes that are inaccessible, unhealthy, and they're severely affected by the limited nature of housing as well. And the housing stock that we have will most likely not meet the needs of our future disabled population as well.
So how are disabled people in Aotearoa impacted by the housing options that are currently available for them at the moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, to put into perspective, it's an estimated 2%, you know, as small as 2% of homes that are listed for sale in the New Zealand housing market that are fully accessible. And that means the availability of housing that can properly accommodate the disabled population in New Zealand is disproportionately low. And so that obviously has huge impacts on their physical, mental, and social well-being. You know, for example, in terms of the physical aspect of it, to live in an inaccessible home means, you know, the likelihood of further injuries, you know, just going about the home, as well as, you know, something as simple as entering and exiting the home. You know, something that we all sometimes take for granted is, you know, most houses you'll notice, you know, have steps coming into the home, and there's no level entry to go in and out. And something as simple as that can lead to, you know, additional injuries for someone that has a mobility impairment. And as well as the fact that, you know, when it's difficult to enter and exit a home or to go about the home, you know, a lot of the time these, you know, disabled individuals are being confined to their homes. And so that negatively impacts their ability to socialize with, you know, family, friends, and to just go about, you know, their daily lives and achieve simple things in the community, such as, you know, going shopping or, you know, going to the park or going to the bank, you know, things that we as, you know, able-bodied individuals might take for granted. And then even for, you know, for family carers, there was a report that showed that, you know, 40% of family carers have injured themselves taking care of their disabled family member. And, you know, inaccessible homes ultimately contribute to that figure. And again, yeah, it just has that effect on their well-being.
How does New Zealand fare in comparison to other developed countries when it comes to providing housing for the disabled community?
Well, I mean, my report touches a little on Australia as a comparative example. I mean, if we take a look at Australia, they recently actually made some revisions to their national construction code. And so I believe it was in Victoria, Australia, they recently introduced the livable housing provisions, which sees that all private dwellings meet a minimum standard of accessibility. And, you know, Australia is sort of seeing a similar situation here in New Zealand, where their disabled population is growing, as well as, you know, their elderly population as well. And so the need for accessible housing is growing in Australia, just as it is here in New Zealand. But, you know, here in New Zealand, we have the, you know, the Building Act, the Building Code, but that is only really enforceable on, you know, public facilities and public housing. And it has no control over how, you know, private homeowners and private developers construct their homes. And so there's no really mandatory requirement for homes to meet a minimum standard of accessibility. And, you know, that's concerning in a way, because I believe it's 38% of, you know, disabled people are estimated to live in some form of rental accommodation. And so if the home is inaccessible, you know, the ability to add further modifications for better added accessibility falls ultimately on the homeowner's discretion. And so most of the time, these disabled people or their families have no power whatsoever to enhance their home to make it more livable.
So just to reiterate, New Zealand doesn't have enough legislation to ensure that disabled people are provided with accessible housing.
No, that's all I can really say. Well, I mean, you know, Kāinga Ora, New Zealand Social Housing Agency, they did, I believe it was in 2019, they committed to ensuring that 15% of all new public homes built meet universal accessibility standards. And so there was that effort in the public housing sector. But even then, a report found in 2023 found that only 1.5% of homes built within that time frame guaranteed by Kāinga Ora met those standards. And so it's a very, very small amount. And again, that's only in the public sector. And in the private market, you know, as you say, there is no legislation that requires those private homes to meet accessibility standards.
So what legislative reforms would be needed to improve housing options for the disabled community?
Well, I mean, again, you know, to take Australia as a comparative example, there needs to be some sort of change to require a minimum standard of accessibility to be met in any new constructed home, really. You know, it's not asking for a lot. You know, minimum requirement of accessibility is things as simple as, you know, a level entry into the home, anything as a bathroom on the ground level, or doors that are wider to allow for, you know, wheelchairs or any other assistive you know, tools. And so, yeah, you know, it's not really asking for a lot. You know, just some minimum accessibility standards needs to be sort of mandated to better provide for our disabled community, as well as for our elderly as well.
And lastly, you contributed to a submission to the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment for accessibility incentives. Could you tell us a little bit about that submission?
Yeah. So that was sort of the first task I was given coming into my internship to contribute to Disability Connect submission. And it was advocating for better accessibility in MBIE's new granny flat policy. And so something that people don't realize with granny flats is they can actually serve as excellent alternatives for families with disabled children or elderly relatives who might otherwise consider residential care or just be forced to cope with an inaccessible home. And so the submission essentially proposed allowing owners to increase the size of the granny flat by a further 15% while still receiving the same benefits outlined in the proposal. And, you know, by increasing it by 15%, that would essentially allow for better mobility around the granny flat unit, especially for wheelchair users, as well as allow for the construction of a fully accessible one or two bedroom units, or allow for the construction of a wet area bathroom. And again, that's really, really important to address the needs of families with disabled or elderly family members. And it would essentially make granny flats a more viable housing option for families looking for accessible and multi-generational living spaces.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.